Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
We're joined by Kevin Byrne. Hello, right. Kevin.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in and joining us. We are pleased. Funny enough, I was just saying, just as you called, how much I wanted to talk to you because we were having a discussion in the studio about start-up businesses and how you get started with internet-based businesses, which is what my background is as well. And I was the other guys in the studio were asking me how I got started. But I said, I really wanted to talk to you about how you got started. So it's a real pleasure to welcome to the Business Bunker Show Mr. Kevin Byrne, who's the founder of Checkatrade. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. If you don't mind, can you take us back to what really inspired you to come up with the idea of Checkatrade in the first place?
Of course. Well, it's going back a long time. I was a young man and I had some hair.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Well, it started actually a long, long time before it was called Checkatrade. When my children started to appear on the scene, my wife actually said to me, "Kev, our carpets are filthy." So I got a carpet cleaner around. It was like, "Whoa, I can't afford that." And I actually ended up borrowing 250 quid off my mum, and I bought a carpet cleaning machine and started cleaning carpets.
Well, okay.
But then it was like, where do I advertise? So, although I was a young man at the time, I was a graphic designer working for a local printer. So I had some skills in developing sort of leaflets and stuff. So I actually went to some friends of mine who were plumbers and builders, and I said, "Look, if we all put 20 quid in a pot, I'll get some leaflets printed and get them distributed locally, and you can distribute them around your houses where you live, and we'll see whether that develops anything." And that developed into what I call the local business directory, right. And it ended up being one of those little A5 books that comes through everyone's door now.
Mm.
But I'm pretty sure I was one of the first in the UK to develop one of those. But that's sort of got me used to talking to tradesmen and selling advertising space.
Right.
So that was 27 years ago.
Well, okay. Right, cool. Yeah.
Mm. But that's not what instigated Checkatrade. What instigated Checkatrade was I've been producing this little book for a long time, and a tornado went through my hometown.
Wow.
And that was quite rare for a tornado to actually cause damage. It caused £10 million worth of damage. And it wasn't a light bulb moment for me. It was something that grew on me as an idea over a period of time. But what I couldn't come to grips with was if someone's got some damage to their home or just needed it repaired or improved, a tradesman can come into your home, and they can rip you off, they can take your life savings and leave your house in a mess.
Yep.
And get away with it. Hmm. And yet, if I went down to Sainsbury's and walked out with a bottle of wine, I'd get arrested.
Yeah, sure.
If I didn't pay for it, of course.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get my head around that. So I started to look at the guilds and the federations, local government, central government, to see whether there was anything out there at all that would protect consumers from rogue trades.
Mm.
And apart from one of the roofing federations at the time, which I thought, oh, they're actually doing something, I just couldn't see anything. So tentatively, I started to pick the phone up, and I phoned a few of the tradesmen that I knew just with an idea, saying, "Look, I'm going to be calling this the phone box." That was the original concept.
Right, okay, cool.
I'm looking for one plumber, one electrician, one builder, and if you can give me some qualifications, letters from your previous customers, and your insurance documents, we'll say that these are trades that have been recommended by local people.
Mm.
And that's how it started.
Well,
19 years ago.
Wow. And presumably you started that in your local area just with local people.
Yeah, I had no money. Mm. It was before the internet. This was 1998.
Right.
So it was purely a print-based product at that point. It was a directory that went through people's doors.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're dead right. It was local to me. It was Chichester.
Right.
And we printed, I think, we didn't call it the phone box, although that was the initial idea. We ended with the first name of the first product went through people's doors. It was called Scout.
Okay.
Meaning we'd scouted out and looked around and tried to find the best trades.
Right, okay, cool. So that kind of preempts the question I was going to ask you, because I'm going to know the answer now, because you started off with a hard copy thing. We were talking just before you called in about this, and the guys in the studio were asking. I run a business called Jobs in Kent, which is a recruitment portal, and we put the first portal up 20 years ago. And they were just asking me how I started, and I said, well, it was really difficult then because nobody had heard of the internet and certainly nobody had access to it. Starting an online business of that kind is incredibly difficult because you have no customers and you have no audience, and you've got to build those two. But I guess with you, you were able to transfer some of that from your printed things into your first websites.
Well, my first website was literally a TIFF of one of the printed directories.
Right, okay.
there was no interaction, there was no background office to it at all. Hmm. It was just a photograph of, because I was a graphic designer, I could turn it into a PDF and simply just post it on a website.
Hmm.
Not really realizing where the website would really kick in, but I thought, you know, as a graphic designer, I did a few of the very, very first websites that were out there.
Hmm.
So that was my first step myself into it, not really realizing how big it would become.
Right.
I think one of the big things that happened to me was that as time went by, and this was quite early on, this is around about the year 2000,
hmm.
When the internet was around, but again, people didn't really understand it, or the access to it was limited and it was really slow. I was asking tradesmen for recommendations from previous customers.
Right.
And then it just dawned on me, what if I could get recommendations on an ongoing basis and use this internet for it?
Hmm.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? So what do you do with an idea? You see if someone else is doing it so you can copy it.
Right.
So I went, and this is before TripAdvisor, before Google, before all the major brands that are out there that do reviews. And I couldn't find anything to copy. There was nothing. So if I have got a claim to fame, and I'll stop saying it if someone proves me wrong, I think I was the first in the world to do online reviews.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. I'm sure you were. I, in doing a bit of background research, I was looking at that and trying to find out where the first idea for that came from. And I would pretty much concur. I think you're about the first into it, for sure. Yeah. And certainly in any meaningful way, even if someone was messing about locally somewhere, nobody knows about it. So it's fantastic. And of course, what you've done there is created, well, I don't know how to term it really. The entire world works on recommendations and reviews these days. We don't do anything, or I certainly don't do anything, without checking a review first. I won't book a restaurant, I won't book a hotel, I won't go on holiday, I won't get an electrician, I won't do anything without checking.
I know there was a government commission that put something out about 2 years ago. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was, they came back with a figure that said 54% actively use online reviews to make a decision when using a service or buying a product.
Yeah.
And I'm sure just in 2 years that 54% must have gone up quite dramatically.
I actually looked at the numbers the other day, and I'm trying to remember what they were, and I think, I might be wrong, but I think it was somewhere near a 71% now.
Yeah, I would probably say that's a good guess.
Which wouldn't surprise me, because everybody you talk to says, oh, I checked it on there, or I reviewed it on there, or I looked on there, or I was going to go here, but I didn't when I read the reviews or whatever. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Well, I mean, that's amazing. And funnily enough, the conversation we were having was about starting, but we got a young entrepreneur with us as our next guest on, Ben, and we were talking to Ben in the studio about this kind of thing. And Bird, who's my co-host here, was asking about, you know, when you start a business, do you start with a goal? Do you know what your end is and all the rest of it? And for me, I certainly don't. I own 10 businesses, and I've just got this idiot view of just starting businesses for the hell of it. And for me, I just do stuff because it looks interesting and I see where it goes. And if it doesn't go anywhere, then I stop doing it. If it does, I keep going with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, You will talk to some people that will say that's the right way. You'll get to someone else that says you've got to focus on one thing, get a business plan, lay everything out, analyse what you want to achieve in what time period and what sacrifices you're prepared to make, and go and study your competition and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's whatever works for you.
So what camp do you fall into, Kevin?
Oh, I hate business plans.
Yeah, me too.
I hate business plans.
Yeah.
I just want to pick up the phone and get on with it.
Exactly, yeah.
And to me, you know, that's, you know, there will be some people out there that will say, well, that's very foolish. You could be wasting your time.
Mm.
And I agree with them.
Mm.
I do. You can't disagree that a business plan isn't a good idea. Of course it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I just don't like them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And some people will have a business plan that looks forward to 5-6 years.
Mm.
Certainly in the first 10 years of trying to build Checkatrade, there was no business plan.
Sure.
It was what needs to be done, put the fires out, do what's ever necessary, with a view that we want to just build it.
Mm.
And it was all hands to the deck, all hands on pumps. The few members of staff I had, they were absolutely behind me and they were excited to come to work. They knew this was something that the consumer needed and the trades needed. And it was very, very exciting.
Mm, absolutely.
Today, you know, I've sold Checkatrade now. I sold it last year.
Mm.
But the last 5 years of running Checkatrade, we absolutely had to have a business plan.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely. There's no way, you know, when you start to employ 200, 300 people, it becomes very negligent
yeah.
for you not to have that. But I would never look further than 6 months.
Right, yeah.
Kevin, we get loads of people on Twitter giving us questions and answers and asking about business. And somebody, Neville Gaunt, has asked us, can you ask Kevin who came up with the Checkatrade jingle in the ad?
Is that the one that's the William Tell overture?
Yes.
Or for those of us of a certain age, yeah. Lone Ranger theme tune?
Yeah. Because it's genius, isn't it? Because every time I want to say it, I have to sing it.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant.
It was a mixture of myself and Bridget Barnes. Sadly, Bridget passed away last year.
Oh.
But Bridget worked for me for 14 years.
Mm.
And she was my right arm when it came to marketing. And she was the moral compass of the things that I put in place. She would come to me and she said, Kev, are you sure that's the right thing to do? And I'd answer, I said, you know what, Bridget, you're right. We shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
Let's change. She was a phenomenal lady. And between the two of us, I think it was probably 60% her and 40% me. But I'm going back about 16 years.
Right, okay.
Wow.
As to when that, so it's difficult to really pin it. But I think I would probably say Bridget had a little bit more say than I did. But it was a combination of the two of us.
It's brilliant. It's what we in the radio business call an earworm, because it's annoying, but you can't escape it, and you sing it all the time.
The hours of talk sport that I've listened to, and the Checkatrade jingle coming up every time.
And also, Kevin, what are you doing now then? So are you just retired? What are you doing?
I'm still on the board of Checkatrade. Mm. They asked me to stay on as a non-exec and give my advice and my opinion on things, which is great.
Mm.
So although they might not listen to everything that I say, I do have a voice, and the new owners, you know, are tentative and understanding that, you know, you've got to listen to the founder.
Mm.
But apart from that, that doesn't take much of my time up. I'm doing a number of things. For many years, I have enjoyed dabbling in property.
Right.
So I've now created a development company where we've got quite a few houses on the go. We've got some new builds, some refurbishments going on.
Right.
I'm also feeling I'm like someone off Dragon's Den. People are pitching to me constantly.
Right.
Of course they are.
And it's very, very interesting. There's a couple out there that I'm looking like I'm going to invest in.
Mm, okay.
Is that something you thought you'd end up in, Kevin? You know, when you first started Checkatrade, looking to now being a quote unquote angel investor into businesses.
Not in a million years. Mm. No. I just wanted to solve the road trade problem.
Mm.
I often thought that I should rename Checkatrade. and it should have been called goodenoughformymum.com. because that really does focus you as to who you let on board.
Ben's writing a plan at the moment, yeah, Kevin. He's going to pitch you it's goodenoughformymum.com, I think.
But that really does focus you. When you start thinking, when my mum, sadly again, my mum passed away last year, but when my mum was with us, and she was saying, Kev, who should I have in to rebuild my conservatory? Let's have a look, Mum. and that really does make you start thinking about the quality of the trades. And when I left Checker Trade, and I'm sure all of these things are still in place, there was 18 considerations.
Right.
And out of those 18, 13 were actual checks before a trade. And if I ever failed in Checker Trade, it was that.
Right.
I didn't get that message across.
Right. How robust the checking was.
How robust, I don't think I successfully got that message across.
Right.
I mean, no one put the checks in place that we did.
Right.
We knew that if there was a dodgy trade out there, the people that would know who the dodgy trades were the actual trades themselves, the other trades.
Yep, absolutely.
So we had something in place for our existing members to blow the whistle, but they could do that completely 100% anonymously.
Right.
And if that one trade blew the whistle on another, that would instigate a whole new, fresh level of vetting that we would put on that particular trade.
Mm.
And sometimes we would expose things that we didn't see the first time around, but sometimes we didn't see anything, and it was just one trade trying to badmouth another one off.
I was going to say, with that, did you ever come across people that were just kind of trying to put their competition out of business? Yeah.
Occasionally, you have someone. I mean, I would imagine it happens on TripAdvisor a lot, where one local restaurant will go and badmouth another.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I always had a saying on the internet, and this was basically what I used to say: I will never get into a position where I will allow anybody to say anything about anybody else without justification or proof.
Mm. Absolutely.
And that's exactly what the internet is today.
Mm.
Yep.
There are some reviews out there that will instantly post a job.
Mm.
Sorry, will instantly post a review.
Yep.
They don't know who the reviewer is, and they don't know whether it's true or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I sold Checker Trade in November last year, every single feedback that came in, we called the consumer.
Right.
54,000 phone calls a month.
Wow.
Absolutely immense.
Right.
And we would have a way of asking the questions with the consumers to try and, you know, the best we can, that this was a genuine customer with a genuine review.
Yeah.
And we did find trades that falsified their reviews, and we kicked them off.
Right.
It's like testimonials as well, isn't it? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You see so many people writing testimonials on their websites, and actually, is that a selling point? And is it real?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And again, if there's one aspect to Checker Trade I think I failed in, is getting that message over to the consumer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That these are, and you know, as with all business is, and with the internet being what it's like, where anybody can say what they want about anyone.
Mm.
You know, we would get things said about us that just wasn't true.
Yep.
Oh, Checker Trade only posted good reviews. It was just rubbish.
Yeah.
It was rubbish, you know. Mm. We would post a bad review. We would.
Yeah.
But there would only be one bad review in every 200 jobs.
Right.
So you've got to really look to find them.
Yeah. and surely that's the point, isn't it? The whole point of this is to stop people behaving badly because they know they're going to get reviewed badly.
Absolutely. And I would, you know, the way it works is this. If a tradesman gets a bad review on Checker Trade, his phone won't ring for a month.
Yep. Yep.
So what are they going to do?
Mm.
They're going to make sure they do a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's almost self-policing, although it's not, but you could argue that there's an element of it that's self-policing.
Absolutely.
When someone's on Checker Trade, they can't afford to do a bad job.
Yep.
Because they know we're going to publish it,
isn't it? Absolutely. I mean, without being funny, I have a reasonably substantial following on Twitter. Even with big corporates that annoy me, if they annoy me with bad service, I'll put it on Twitter. And there's nothing they can do about it. They have to respond. Whereas in the old days, you could ring a big corporate, and by the time you got through all their IVR boxes and the rest of it, you'd lost the will to live. Nowadays, they can't, you know, more and more companies can't afford to give bad service because it becomes too evident too quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
And that is entirely down to you and your invention, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's following on from what Paul just said, Kev. You know, we're talking about something that you have done very well. You know, you spoke about the failings and what you've been able to put across, but what you've done very well is take the anonymity out of, you know, the bad review, like TripAdvisor, where, you know...
It could be anyone.
Yeah, it could be absolutely anybody, and the company gets very defensive about it. But, you know, you take that anonymity away, and Checkatrade effectively built that great environment for good business people to continue doing good business.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Kevin, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Now, I do know that you're going to be doing a keynote speech at the Southeast Construction Expo in September at Ardingly. Is that not so?
It's true.
Cool. And what are you going to be talking to us about there?
I don't know, really. they've basically said to me, Kev, you can talk about whatever you like. You know, some people like to hear the Checkatrade story on how I started it and how I developed it and the issues, etc.
Yeah.
I sometimes talk about what it takes to build a team.
Yep.
If you haven't got a team, you've got nothing.
Yep.
No one achieves anything extraordinary on their own. They've got to have a team behind them that backs their vision.
Absolutely.
I sometimes talk about expectations. You're only ever going to achieve what you expect to achieve, and if you expect to achieve nothing, that's what you'll achieve.
Yeah, true.
So I sometimes talk about expectations. I don't know. I generally sit there and engage. I talk to a few people beforehand and see where people is. I try and gauge where people are in their businesses and tailor it to that.
Fantastic. Well, we're really looking forward to that, Kevin. We'll all be there, and we're looking forward to hearing you live at the Southeast Construction Expo. For the moment, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunk Show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Do enjoy the rest of your day, and we look forward to seeing you in Ardingly.
Anytime, Paul. Just if you want me to come back on, talk about something specific business, I'll be happy to do it.
That would be wonderful, and we'll certainly try and set that up, because we'd love to hear from you some more. Kevin, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy your day.
And you.
Cheers now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Kevin Byrne there, founder of Checkatrade. What a nice chap.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.